Welcome into the Pirate Preview, Cincinnati this week on the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond, along with ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from the Grange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, guys? Just getting ready to watch the Pirates here in a little less than 48 hours. Try to conquer the world and beat the number 7 ranked Cincinnati Bearcats.
And we have Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba is producing tonight. How are you, sir? We'll see if he can chime in. Anyway, we'll get back to Bubba. We'll say hello to Bubba. And now with us from the Bearcat Journal, UC 24/7 Sports, Chad Brendel. Man, Chad, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me in, fellas.
Yeah, before we talk football, can you talk about the pre-show right before we started? You guys had a terrible event happen early this morning. And for Pirate Nation and maybe Bearcat Nation joining in that don't know, what happened in the big town of Cincinnati today?
So the main thoroughfare is the Brent Spence Bridge that is I-71, I-75 combined that runs right through the heart of downtown Cincinnati. It's a double-decker bridge. It's old. It should have been replaced 30 years ago. And this morning, two semi-tractors collided on the inside of the bridge. I guess 100 pounds of diesel fuel caught on fire inside the bridge. And there's a massive fire that we don't know how long it's going to be until that bridge comes back up. So traveling through Cincinnati for the next however many weeks is gonna not be an ideal situation.
Yeah, diesel fuel burns very hot, and it can melt steel. If it's as bad as what you're saying, that bridge may not be reopened. They may have to rebuild the bridge. What they'll probably do is build a temporary bridge and while they're building a new bridge.
Yeah, you can look go on Twitter and look up Brent Spence Bridge, and the pictures are, you hear, I mean, you hear wrecks on that bridge all the time. So you didn't really think too much of it this morning. And then the pictures started coming out around 11, 12 o'clock, and it was like, oh, yeah. My wife's got a doctor's.
How long is that bridge?
Probably about a half a mile, three quarters of a mile.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And it was right. And it was right in the middle where there's no support. So it was,
oh my God,
the structurally most unsound point of the bridge is where the fire happened. So it's traveling in Cincinnati is going to be a pain in the rear end for the time being, for sure.
No doubt about it. So good luck to all the folks in Cincinnati, especially rush hour is no fun. I'm sure that's even worse now. Hopefully we'll have a good football game tonight like we did last year, Chad, to talk about. I know Cincinnati had a play there at the end of the game, and Pirates, Holton Ahlers had a really big game, a kind of a coming out party for him as far as being quarterback of the Pirates and a starter. And this year, we'll see how things go. You can't talk about last year because last year was last year. But if it's any indication how it was last year, we'll have another fourth quarter game and right down to the very end.
Yeah, I think, you know, Ahlers got going a little bit, found a rhythm a little bit early in that game. One of the main problems Cincinnati had last year was penalties. And I think there were six different defensive penalties that resulted in East Carolina first downs. So that allowed them to find a rhythm, which finding a rhythm against the Cincinnati defense over the past 3 years has been very difficult. And Ahlers is one of the few guys that was able to do it. So it'll be very interesting to see because they haven't allowed anybody to get into a rhythm yet. Brady White and Shane Buechel, Toon from Houston last week, those three guys have all been pretty good this year, and none of them have been able to solve the puzzle that is UC's defense. So I'm really interested to see if Ahlers just kind of has a cheat code or something, because he was so good at it last year that you wonder. And I asked Luke Fickell about that today, and he was not happy with me.
Yeah, Chad, I kind of heard Fickell's comment saying that game didn't happen last year, that it's been erased from the record books. And well, yeah, bottom line is he still won the damn game.
Yeah, I mean, he was joking to give me a hard time, which is one of his favorite things to do. He enjoys nothing more than poking at me, which, I mean, it's better than him not noticing you, I guess.
No, for sure.
But I mean, yeah, that was, it was just a game that, that they were really frustrated with their performance, because that's, you know, that that's not been the standard for this defense. So, you know, it's good. Like I said, it's going to be really interesting to see how they respond to it, because they know the ECU offense kicked their butts last year, and that's just something they're not used to.
Well, and then again, you know, I don't know how much motivation that is when at the end of the game you won. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, and Cincinnati's defense was good last year. This year, though, I mean, you know, obviously, it's on a whole other level. I mean, you guys have the best defense in college football. I mean, you tell me who in college football in 2020 has a better defense than you guys? Because even Alabama this year, you know, they're not stopping people. People are scoring on them. I can't even think who would be, you know, I'm sure there's somebody, and maybe you'll have it, maybe Ohio State. Your guys' defense is as good as anybody's I've seen in any conference. I mean, to hold SMU to 14, Memphis to 10, Houston to 10 in three consecutive weeks, that's insanity.
Yeah, we wondered if in the beginning of the year if this was going to be the best UC defense in the history of the program. I think the general consensus is the 2008 team that went to the Orange Bowl and lost to Virginia Tech, that was considered to be the best defense in program history. And I think this defense is, at least to this point, passed them considerably. There's just not a weakness. They run a three-man front, and they're great against the run, which it just doesn't happen. They've got, you know, two elite edge guys in Myjai Sanders and Elijah Ponder. They're very strong at nose tackle. They've got three linebackers that fly around and are, you know, that make plays on the ball. And then they have probably the best secondary in the country. So when you start stacking it up, what opponents are finding out is there's just no empty space. There's no area that you can consistently attack. We've seen teams try to go over the top on them. That hasn't worked. Houston last week tried to go short on them and try to make big plays. But because they're the thing that makes this defense different from what I've seen around the country, I haven't seen anybody tackle as well as this team tackles. If they get their hands on you, you're going down. And that is just, you know, the lost art of football has been tackling, because it isn't practiced nearly as much as it used to be. This team tackles, and they do it at every spot, and that has put them in a position to have about as strong of a season as you could possibly imagine from, you know, from one unit.
Chad, something that just popped in my head, kind of big picture looking, and just something I've thought about. When Cincinnati got left behind, you know, you guys, you mentioned going to Orange Bowls, and the Big East was a BCS conference. Mm-hmm. You guys, you know, were in Conference USA several years ago. When you guys got left behind, didn't get in a Power 5 conference, you had Tommy T there as head coach. And
don't remind me.
Yeah, some of your fans were kind of negative on the American getting left, and kind of a little UConn-esque in terms of the attitude of the fans. But it seems like nobody's really, and I'm, of course, you'd rather be in a Power 5 conference, but it seems like, you know, the program has gotten over being left in the American. You're right back really where you were in the Big East in terms of your position in college football. You're a Power 5, you're a top 10 team competing for the chance to go to a New Year's Six Bowl. So you really are right back where you were under Kelly. Do you feel like your fan base is kind of accepted the American, realize, hey, hell, it is a good league even without the BCS or Power 5 tag, whereas UConn just couldn't get over it?
I think that's a tricky question. because I, to an extent, the eye is still on getting, you know, to a Power 5 conference. I think the biggest difference is, in the beginning, this was a league that everybody thought was going to be a basketball league, right? The football as a whole was not what anybody was hanging their hat on when this league started. And over the last 6 years or so, basketball's kind of remained the same, in the same position. And football, surprisingly, has been the one that has taken off. You're seeing recruiting take jumps at you know, the schools at the top of this conference, much more so than you are in basketball. You're seeing teams crack the top 25 and get, you know, over the past couple of years, we've had what? UCF, Memphis, Cincinnati, SMU, Navy, Temple at times, I think, has popped into the top 25. So you're looking at 6-7 teams that all of a sudden have made themselves, you know, legitimate. And I think that quieted, you know, the fan base quite a bit, because that was the concern was, you know, when you go back and look at that Big East, it was Cincinnati and West Virginia and Louisville and Pitt. Syracuse wasn't any good, but USF was on a run at that point in time. So, you know, the competition level right now from when they left the Big East is not really all that different. And a couple of those West Virginia teams with Pat White and Steve Slayton were, you know, put themselves in national title contention, and Louisville with Teddy Bridgewater was sniffing around for a little while. But, you know, I don't think, because the American has gotten better, I don't think that concern about this league being considered a bad football league is really relevant anymore, because it's a good football league.
No, it is. And I think the bottom of the league is getting better too. East Carolina, Tulsa, obviously. You know, so there really isn't a, with maybe the exception of South Florida this year, really isn't a bad team in the league. And, right, you know, another big picture thing, you guys, to me, up until this past weekend, with Notre Dame beating Clemson, you guys had a clear path to me to the playoffs. And now Notre Dame beating Clemson's kind of screwed that up a little bit. But hold tight, my friend, because the Fighting Irish has to play a pesky Boston College team. And you guys could get right back on the path to the playoffs.
And they've got, a tricky game at North Carolina as well. And Brian Kelly owes us one. If we're being honest. Notre Dame hurt. I think the Georgia game hurt just as much, because not only did that put Florida in a position to move, it allowed them to take Texas A&M with them, because Texas A&M beat Florida earlier in the year. So that was not a one-team situation, but a two-team situation,
yeah,
which, you know, that it's unfortunate, but you got to play the hand you're dealt, I guess.
Yeah, Chad, that's something I told the guys earlier in the week, actually. I was going to bring it up on a Pirate Football Playback last week, but I didn't have the opportunity to take part in that. But, you know, looking at the polls and saw the results, I was afraid that was going to happen.
I mean, you know, it's the hierarchy of college football. That's how it goes, right? Like, you have to assume. And I didn't think – the only thing I got wrong – was I thought it was going to take another week or two for Texas A&M to jump Cincinnati. I didn't think that was going to be as immediate as it was, but, you know, there's not a lot you can do about it.
And it's not fair. I mean, because what more can you do? You, to me, the three wins you guys have had in a row is as impressive as three wins as anybody's had in the country. I mean, to do what you guys have done back-to-back-to-back weeks is just is incredible. I mean, just dominant performances against good football teams. And
yeah,
one more big picture question, at least on my part. If you guys, let's say you go undefeated, and I hope you don't, because that means we didn't upset you. But if you go if you go undefeated and you don't make the playoffs, if you had your druthers, would you rather play a Power 5 team, or how appealing, or is it appealing at all, is the possibility of a matchup with BYU perhaps getting in at large?
I don't think it's appealing at all. The goal for Cincinnati long term is to be Power 5, right?
Correct.
And to prove that they can compete for championships, I don't know what you do for yourself by taking out BYU in a New Year's Six bowl. I just don't think it moves the needle any.
So I think it would be fun in the sense that it would be, you know, maybe what, the second best quarterback in the country so far this year. Maybe Justin Fields right up there as well. Taking on what is, you know, one of the a top three defense. I think that would be outstanding. But other than that, I don't really, for Cincinnati, I don't know that there's much appeal in getting a shot at BYU.
No question about it.
I will say this. I think nationally, I think for the average college football fan, I think it would kill in the ratings. I think you're not your Cincinnati fan, but just your average college football fan would probably absolutely love to see that matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a good matchup. It's not the quality of the matchup. I think that
no, I get what you're saying.
It's the impact of the game.
You want to play Florida
or Texas A&M?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Notre Dame.
Somebody of that ilk. Yes.
Now, the interesting part is next year, Cincinnati might have a chance to prove they belong in the college football playoff. They get Notre Dame at Notre Dame, and they're playing an Indiana program that looks like is finally getting themselves off the mat.
That's good timing.
Knock off Notre Dame and Indiana and run the table in the American, all of a sudden,
if you do that, if you're not in the playoffs, then ain't never going to happen for a group of five team. Might as well go to the lawsuits at that point.
Yeah, and you might as well pack Luke Fickell's bags, because showing him that he can't get to the promised land would not be a good selling point going forward, I wouldn't think.
Sure.
You know, I guess Luke turned down Michigan State. At least that was the word out there. Do you think there's a job out there that, besides maybe the obvious ones? I mean, do you think that there's something that could come up in this year that he'd be interested in?
I don't think so. Right now, I think we're looking. I mean, maybe Penn State would be tempting, but I mean, I think it's Ohio State or Notre Dame right now. There's a lot of talk about Michigan. That is, Luke is from Columbus, Ohio. He has spent about 85% of his life now in Columbus, Ohio. He's going to go to Ann Arbor, and you know, his wife's from Columbus. I can't see that being a cultural fit, as they describe it these days. So I don't think there's a lot of different places that are going to be able to lure him away.
I think he'd be interested in going out west. What about USC?
I do not see his wife wanting to move their family to LA.
Okay.
I don't. Now that you know, he knows the athletic director there. Mike Bone was the athletic director here at Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He has some familiarity with the people that are out there. But six kids, moving them to Los Angeles.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Might
want to do it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure the kids would want to do it. I don't, but Amy Fickell is the one that calls the shots in the Fickell household. So I don't know how thrilled she would be about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a few minutes that we have in the green room, Jerry J Dog Dillon. He was a linebacker for the Pirates, and looking forward to talking to him. That's very exciting. He was actually under, let's see, three different coaches that I remember: Baker, Lewis, and Logan. We'll be talking to him in a few minutes. Get his the Pirates' perspective in a few minutes. But Chad, you were talking about the big picture. You know, with the one thing that is interesting to me is, have you noticed, like, when the UCF had their runs, how they started out like towards the bottom, and now the one thing I've noticed, if you guys haven't noticed, is Cincinnati got way more respect than UCF did, and I'm wondering, with the number seven. And they put the number seven up there for you guys, and that they people have moved up ahead of you guys, like Texas A&M, like we talked about. But you think there's still an outside chance, because you really only have to beat to number four, so you're really, really, really close.
Yeah, still a chance.
We still have a lot of football to be played.
There's definitely a chance. There's you know, if let's say Clemson had won and Georgia had won, I think they're sitting at number five and sitting, you know, in a great position. But sitting at number seven still, I mean, the SEC this week imploded. Is there any games left in the SEC? You know,
not many.
So if you know, if you're Luke Fickell, you tell your team, look, just keep doing what we're doing and keep winning and get to the finish line. And whatever happens at the finish line happens at the finish line. But it's way too early. You know, Wisconsin lost basically their entire season because of what happened in their situation. You know, Trevor Lawrence, does Notre Dame beat Clemson? If Clemson has Trevor Lawrence, I think we all feel pretty strongly about what that answer would be. So, you know, it's a situation where, you know, Luke Fickell has talked about it a lot. He was on SportsCenter last night, and I think he's on point. Just control what you can control. Go out, win the games, win them the way that they – like, the Houston game was crazy because it never felt like there was any stress on that game.
Yeah.
You know, it was very workmanlike. It was very – almost the word I was trying to think of today to describe it, it was almost professional in the way that they just dismissed Houston. Like, Houston had no chance to do anything against them.
I love Elvis and TCB taking – he had a big, big chain that said TCB, taking care of business. So that's what you guys are doing, taking care of business. So what are your keys to the game? What are you looking for as the – what Cincinnati has to do, and maybe you can even tell us what do you think East Carolina has to do to win the game.
I mean, the one thing I'm really going to be paying attention, from what I've seen, ECU has had a little bit of struggle along that offensive line, especially the tackle spots.
Yep.
And Myjai Sanders has been essentially unblockable for Cincinnati through six games. He just got moved up on the Athletic's top 50 list. He's their number 49 NFL prospect in the country. And he's a kid that wasn't even on top 200 lists coming into the year. But the last I checked, Pro Football Focus had him graded as number two edge rusher in the country. And if ECU's offense has problems at tackle, they are going to have a very long day with Myjai Sanders and Elijah Ponder. So I think that's a big factor. And then, obviously, does Holton Ahlers know something about passing on Cincinnati's defense that nobody else knows? I'm fascinated to see that because I have watched up close Brady White and Clayton Toon see ghosts. And Brady White was throwing the ball 15 yards down the field into the turf where there was nobody within 10 yards because he just had to get rid of it and couldn't find anybody open. So I think those are the two things. In terms of, you know, ECU being able to move the ball on Cincinnati, and then defensively, can ECU stop Cincinnati's what their running attack has been doing over the past couple weeks between Jared Doakes, between Desmond Ridder, and between Alabama transfer Jerome Ford? So, you know, I think those are the keys going into this thing.
All right, Chad, before we let you go, how can people find things with Bearcat General UC 24/7 Sports?
BearcatJournal.com. You can find us there. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Brendel, the Twitter for the site at Bearcat Journal. We're pretty self-explanatory. I made us as easy to find as you can possibly be. So check us out there, and we've got lots of good content.
Sounds good, Chad. Good luck on Friday nights, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Appreciate all your help this year with the Inside Slant and now with the preview.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. See you later.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye. All right. Now we're going to bring in linebacker for, let's see, Art Baker, Bill Lewis, and we also have Coach Steve Logan. Very excited to welcome in Jerry J-Dog Dillon, and we'll see if we can bring him in right now. We're going to bring him in right now. Let's see. There we go.
Just me and you, Dave.
Hey, Jerry. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Welcome into the show, and obviously we're very excited to have you as we're getting ready for a big game on Friday night. I was going to say Saturday, but Friday night lights.
Right. We'll talk about your career.
We'll talk about your career, Cincinnati, the game, and much more of your life So glad to have you on. And Kyle, if you can talk a little bit, I'll be right back in a couple minutes.
All right. Thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry, talk about, if you will, your recruitment, how you ended up as a Pirate. And was it Coach Baker that recruited you to East Carolina?
Yeah, Coach Baker recruited me. And he sent his henchman, Donnie Thompson, down to Florida to seek me out. And he came to my house, sat down, had dinner with my mom. Next thing you know, after dinner, my mom said, "You're not going anywhere but East Carolina." You know, so I ended up being a Pirate. Very good move for me, though.
So Donnie Thompson won her over.
Yeah, he won over. I never thought I was going to leave the state of Florida. But
yeah, that's important. How many players seem to always talk about their mom, particularly older players. You know, and I don't mean Capgras, he was older. But you know what I mean. Versus today's players, man. I'm telling you, how many of you guys say your mom or you know was all right? Once we met this position coach or this head coach, that was it. You were going to East Carolina.
Yeah. My dad just sat in the corner. You know, he didn't say anything. My mom, after he left, he said, "That coach is going to take care of you. You're going to East Carolina." I'm like, "Oh." I'm like, "All right, okay." So that was my move. ECU or bust.
So it worked out. It worked out.
It worked out good.
And then what year were you when you transitioned into Bill Lewis? Obviously, Bill took over.
Well, I only had Art Baker for 1 year, and that was in 88. And Bill Lewis came in 89, the 89 season, my redshirt freshman year. Okay. Bill Lewis came in, and he brought in the staff. You know,
hell of a staff. Bill,
what's that?
It was a hell of a staff.
Oh, yeah. You know, as players, you know, we considered ECU as a stepping stone for a lot of those coaches because they would come in, stick around for a year, and then they're gone. You know, so it was kind of hard. Even since I played defense, you know, the year that we ended up winning the Peach Bowl was the first year that we won. We ran the same defense twice for 2 years in a row. You know, my freshman year we had one defense. Sophomore year we had another defense. So 89, 90 and 91 was the only year that we ran the same defense twice, which was good.
Yeah, I would imagine running different defensive schemes and having different defensive coordinators every year can kind of get old fast.
It does, because you think you get it down, got the defense down pat, and next thing you know, here comes a new defensive coordinator. And they change up what you learn. Now you got to start all over again. So yeah, it was nice and it was refreshing to run the same defense twice.
Do you think it hurts your player development having to learn a new defense every year? You can't just get better as a player and concentrate on you physically and fundamentals because you're so damn busy trying to learn a new scheme.
That's true. It is. Like I said before, once you get used to something. And you say, okay, now I got what the coach is telling me. I got the way he wants me to be on this particular play or this particular call. And then all of a sudden, over the summer, you hear this coach, you know, end up getting a new offer somewhere else, and he takes off. And a new guy comes in. Now you're like, oh gosh, is he going to like me? Is he going to know how good of a player I am? Even though I work hard, he can hear the word of mouth. But then, you know, he still has to see me in action, and now he brings in a whole new game plan. And now you got to say, oh, you got to learn terminology and positioning all over again. So it's rough, but hey, it's what we do. You know, even though we complain, you know, hey, we were still out there every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this week's matchup against the Bearcats. Obviously, in those days, East Carolina was an independent, not in a conference. So was Cincinnati.
Right.
And I remember you guys played Cincinnati Prigley. Was it every year back then?
Every year. Yeah. Every year. And then, you know, I don't want to say we look forward to Cincinnati, but we did, you know. we did, you know, and it was, I loved it. They weren't as good as they are now.
No.
You know, when I got the call, you know, to be on the podcast yesterday, I sat down here. I ran downstairs with my son. And I said, hey, let's look at the We Believe video. I want to show you something, you know. And Cincinnati game was the first game that I had my first and only touchdown. You know, nice. I had an interception for a touchdown that game.
I was going to ask you about a pick six.
Yeah, pick six. Yeah.
That Cincinnati game, you know, during the 91 season, everybody, that's kind of a forgotten game because the Virginia Tech game was the week before.
And right.
The talk was always, you got to beat Virginia Tech to go to the Peach Bowl.
Right.
Well, you did that. You took care of business. You beat Virginia Tech. Right. But then you got to go play at Cincinnati in an empty Nippert Stadium against a physical football team that wasn't very good. That was a chance to blow everything.
I tell you what.
But you took care of business.
We were nervous. Cincinnati punched us in the mouth. The whole game until the last maybe 7 minutes of the fourth quarter is the only time we felt a little comfortable. Other than that, they came after us. And one thing Bill Lewis did say about that year is every team is going to give you their best. You got a bullseye on your chest. So and Cincinnati almost hit that bullseye. Yeah,
that year. I'm glad they didn't.
I'm glad they didn't either. I'm glad.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, I wanted to ask you about some similarities. Things are not the same, obviously a different era, but for Pirate Nation right now, I know that you guys there towards the end of the Baker era, you had Bill Lewis building the program, taking it to heights that had never been before. I kind of feel like it's a similar. I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago with that 1990 team. It was kind of like building the foundation, you know, for the Peach Bowl. It's not the same, obviously, but can you make some similarities as far as what the Pirates are going through now with having Coach Houston? You have a great coach, great coaching staff, recruiting, but you got a lot of young players, 54 players new on the roster this year.
Yeah, it's tough. Coming off of 1989, I think we were, or the 89 season, I think we were 6-5 or 5-6. Bill Lewis came in, like, start all over. Once again, we started all over again. Learning a new program, learning a new coach. He's trying to get us to trust in him, believe in him. And that's one of the main things that these players have to do now. They have to believe in the process. And it's hard for teenagers, as you would say, because most of these kids are teenagers, 18, 19. You might have 20, 21-year-olds, but you got 54 young players on the team right now. They got the process is, you know, everybody wants to win now, you know, but sometimes it might take a little time in order to get out of the bad habits that was formulated before. So it took us, and I have to be honest with you, with the help of Jeff Connors, the strength coach, and Bill Lewis, he actually broke us down to like, man, okay, all right, we believe it. Before the slogan "We Believe" was even thought about, we started believing in ourselves. Like, you know what? East Carolina is good. You know, we're good. We just don't have the notoriety of some of the bigger schools. We just don't have the press of some of the other schools. But we're just as good as those teams. Just one break, that's all we needed. You know, just one little break, and that would take us over the top. And that 91 season, we got the break other than the Illinois game. But we got all the breaks that year.
No question about it. With that being said, with the current team now, with Mike Houston, I know there's a lot of people that believe in Mike Houston and the staff. That Tulsa game really hurt with the bat. Speaking of, we didn't get any breaks.
That's sickening. I just want to know, what were they looking at? Can you answer that?
I don't know what they were looking at.
The reason I brought that up is when you have a team like the Pirates are now, and you know that you won that game and you should have won the Navy game, do you think there can be a letdown where you say, hey, coach, we did everything we could and we won the game two or three times. They still didn't get it. Is that like a hangover for a team potentially?
When you're not winning, yes. You know, that's in the back of your mind. that we never East Carolina, we never get any of the breaks. You know, I was sitting there talking to some of the, you know, some of my friends, you know, that we're on a chat line. We talk daily, and we said, and pretty much man for man, if this was a Dabo Sweeney or one of the other top name coaches out there, they would have gotten that call. If it wasn't in East Carolina, they would have gotten that call. There was no way they would have let that call stand as a catch, or it wasn't a fumble.
Yeah.
So, but in the back of my mind, you know, as a young player, you know, it's a coach's job to make us think like him. But you know, we're not there yet as teenagers. We're not there as far as our mentality. So yes, we think we're never going to get into breaks. We're, you know, we're never going to. We have to actually make our own destiny, and that's what these guys are thinking. But it's hard when you get so close, but then you feel like you're so far away.
I was going to say, Jerry, to add to that, you guys. And I've met a number of you guys from that team in 91. There's something special. One of the things, you look like you guys were having fun. You were very close. But another thing that you guys knew you were going to win that game, the swagger is something that's missing from Pirate Nation. How do we get the swagger back?
You know, I don't know. Because, you know, back in those days, you had no social media. So we were our swagger. We were Pirate Nation. We depended on each other. Now everything is on the internet, and it's like you have your mentality is you think about it for 1 second, and then you move on to the next thing. The new kids, the new era of thinking for these kids right now. So that it just has to be. I don't know. I really can't answer that. How these guys could really dig down and winning cures a lot of things.
Yeah. You know?
And winning cures. And once they get that taste in their mouth of winning, because I was listening to the podcast earlier. Where did Cincinnati come from?
Exactly.
Right. I mean, these guys used to be the doormat of the independents. We used to. I used to love playing Cincinnati. Now I'm looking at Cincinnati for the past couple of years, and these guys are ranked. You know, they're producing top-notch NFL players, and they're talked about. Not just 1 year, not 2 years, for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they've been talked about. And now they're ranked, what, number 7 in the nation now? Even though we're in a little pandemic year, they're still good.
No question.
No doubt. And I think – Dave, the answer to the swagger question, you know, I think if you go back to that Navy game, if you have Holton Ahlers and you win that one, and then the Tulsa game, if you weren't just screwed over by the officials, right. You'll win both those games. You win two in a row. That would have been
three in a row.
In South Florida the week. Yeah.
Yep.
So I think suddenly you got some swagger. That's how suddenly close it is.
Exactly. That's how close we are. You're right. Yeah. Winning cures a lot, you know.
Yeah, no
you
doubt.
Know, you start, you know, you start believing in yourself. You start believing in yourself. You know,
it's hard to have swagger when you lose, even though you're playing well, even though you know you got screwed. It's hard to have swagger with a big L.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
And absolutely. As far as defensively. Have you been happy with the fact that the depth as far as the D-line is concerned?
We need some rushers. We need some guys to get back to that quarterback. You know, we're giving these guys too much time to throw that ball. It seems like they have forever back there. I mean, you might make one or two plays, but not on a consistent basis. You know, speed is good, but also size is better. If you can have size and speed, you know, that's what you need. That's what we need, you know, as Pirate Nation, you know.
Yeah, and we are really young on the D-line, so maybe that's coming. I hope these guys will continue to develop. It's bad when you're all juniors and seniors and the D line struggling, but at least these are young guys and there's some future there.
Man, if these guys get, I'm telling you, if these guys get a break, the last couple of games of this season, watch next year. It'll be totally different. It'll be flip flop.
Yep.
If all they have to do is taste it, and it will flip it. It will flip their mentality. It'll flip their work habits. It'll just totally flip it. And once that happens, Houston's job is going to be easy.
No, I agree. Those guys
don't want to show up.
Gary, that the very fact that next year all those guys are coming back. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them will be back. Right. Offensively, then you've got a lot of defensive guys that are young. Yeah. They'll be back. They get an extra year. Not many good things about COVID, the pandemic, but that's one of the good things when you're trying to build a program.
Right.
I mean, this program, I don't think that people realize in Pirate Nation, and I have to remind myself, just how low this program got. I ask the players all the time, the former players that come on the show, a guy like you that's a winner, how difficult it must be. Those of us that have played, coached, I haven't coached at your level, played at your level, but as someone that loves East Carolina, that went to East Carolina like I did, media-wise, it's very difficult to watch a team that you know, the program that you know is a top-notch program, and it's at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, one of the worst in Division I. Are you kidding me?
Right. And we know we're not. But the perception, and the record. Yeah, and that's tough, and I hear it constantly because, with being who I am, I talked on the field and I talked off the field, and I got a lot of friends that played at other schools, and they let me have it on a consistent basis, on a regular basis, talking about my Pirates, my beloved Pirates.
Talk about that, Jerry, but the very fact of talking on the field, how much I've always wanted to know from players how much trash talking is going on. Is it constant? Is it it seems like from before it is, but how bad is it when you're on the field versus those of us that are watching
it? It is constant. Because, it's not, I don't want to say it's malicious. It's just trying to get into your opponent's head. You make a good hit, you let them know I'll be back again next play. So you get ready. And then, you mess with them, you mess with your opponent enough, they start making little mistakes. Just little mistakes. All you need, you don't need them. You don't need a lot of mistakes. All you want them to do is think about you. And if they're thinking about you and not thinking about what their coach is called or the play that was called, that's saying you got into their heads. That's all you need. And it's
Jerry,
constant.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever heard a player say to another player? Can you think of anything that sticks out? It's just mind-bogglingly strange.
It's a family show, Kyle. It's a family show.
I can't say.
I mean, I was thinking there's more than one way to get in somebody's head.
Yeah, there's more than one way. There's more than one way. I can't tell you. I can't say it. I can't say. I've heard some weird things.
Jerry,
on top of the pile and under the pile too. So when you see there's a pile, just think about that.
Gotcha.
Jerry, one of the things that drives me nuts as a guy that loves defense, I think that this has become an offensive game. What I mean by that is what today, like when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s going to college, and graduated in 95, all of a sudden those guys in the late 90s, those guys can't make those hits anymore. All of a sudden targeting. I'm so sick and tired of targeting. You're playing football. I know it sounds terrible to say, but you're playing, it's a man sport. It's a tough sport.
Right. And
that drives me crazy. We want safety, obviously, but the same thing not to take away from the game.
Right. Now that's targeting, I think, me personally, this is just Jerry's opinion, is one of the worst one-sided rule in college football. Now, us as defensive players, we know don't leave with a crown of your head. So most of the time, all these plays I'm seeing, most of the players are trying to turn to the side and hit the wide receiver, the quarterback, the running back, whoever. But at the same time, the running back is going down trying to protect themselves, and they get in the line of fire. Who is penalized? The defensive player is penalized 99% of the time. So now they're kicked out of the game, and they kicked out of, if it's the first half of, if they kicked out of the first half, they kicked out of the first half of the next game. So it's tough for a defensive player because it's a one-sided rule. It's one-sided, and as me playing defense, I think personally, I would have been probably kicked out maybe 3 or 4 games in my ECU career. Because we were taught to take the your face mask and put it in your opponent's chest. Because, you know, that's what their numbers are. Put it in your opponent's chest. Now, the tackling game is totally different. Now, you got to turn to the side. Now, if I turn to the side and my opponent turns to the side and we so accidentally hit heads, I'm in trouble. So that's a tough rule that I don't believe in. Now, a lot of my ex-players don't believe in, but I know it's for player safety, but it's a one-sided rule for the defense.
I've always thought it had good intentions, but it's kind of stupid because it's kind of what you're just saying, talking about putting your head in somebody's chest. Well, yeah. aren't you getting head trauma there? What's the difference between hitting your head there or hitting your head on somebody else's head? I get it. Maybe the helmets are both hard, but I've always thought there's only so much you can do. To me, the answer is safer equipment. There's got to be a way to put extra cushion in those helmets.
I mean, the helmets nowadays are it's a whole lot better than what it was. You know, you got the air cushions in the helmets now. You got different safety precautions. So yes, as a matter of fact, I was looking at this game yesterday, and my son said, "Dad, why were your shoulder pads so big?" You know, and I looked at it. My wide receiver shoulder pad was just as big as our shoulder pads, as linebacker shoulder pads. I was like, "Yeah, they were big compared to now." So you know, the technology is a whole lot better now than it was when I played 30 years ago. Dang, I shouldn't have said that, but 30 years ago. But the rules is what gets me, you know, because it's a violent sport. And we're going, and it's all about collision. My job is to dislodge the ball from the wide receiver or dislodge the ball from the running back. And if I hit him hard, which he knows he's going to get hit hard if he comes across the middle, why should I be penalized?
No,
Jerry, we have a.
I was going to make one more comment on that, Dave. I think if it's malicious, maybe throw the penalty. But you know, you see some of these plays, like you say, where you got the running back going down, and the guy's just trying to make the tackle, and the contact to the head is more initiated by the running back or the receiver, but the defender gets penalized. I think there needs to be a tent and malicious and malicious. Lord, I can't talk. You know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying.
With the penalty versus it just being helmet to helmet.
Exactly.
Jerry, we actually have a comment. One of our viewers, if you have a comment that you want to talk to Jerry J. Dog Dillon, former linebacker for the Pirates, you can chime in. And we have one here from Facebook. Tim Marshman says, "Jerry, that's an excellent point on targeting." So that we got other people, I'm sure, that are real football fans. I don't see how you can be a real football fan. I mean, if you think about it, Jerry, you guys were for the 91 season. I'm not trying to kiss up to you. Your 91 season, you were a highlight reel. You guys were amazing in the plays. That's why you won 11 games, best in school history. That's why the Pirates, Pirate Nation knows about the Peach Bowl. But I'm just amazed by that very thing that when you think about it, speaking of highlights, if you're watching SportsCenter, people want to see big hits. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're not wrong at all. That's why, you know, you look at ESPN, you know, you look at basketball, you want to see the dunk. You want to see somebody get dunked on. You look at football. As a football player, I want to see somebody get blown up. You know, now it's an offensive league, what they call it, the air raid league. Everybody wants to pass. But then, okay, yes, it's nice and good that they're well, that they're passing. But, okay, what about the hitting? You know, we want part of it. We want some of the action as well, as a defensive player.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Pirates this weekend taking on arguably the best defensive team in the country. And
right.
You want to talk about defense. The last 3 weeks, Cincinnati held SMU to 14, Memphis to 10, Houston to 10. And that's three pretty good offenses.
That's pretty good.
Playing air raid style offenses. I mean, it's amazing that they're able to do that in this day and age with the rules.
Right. Yeah, I've been following. I don't follow Cincinnati as much, but I've looked at their record and they're undefeated. I mean, I hope the old Cincinnati shows up this week.
I hope you're right. Hey, you know what? What more motivation? If you're a competitor, I said this tonight with Coach Houston. If you're Jerry J. Dog Dillon, these games, take it that you are a current player right now, you're jacked up that you're going to Cincinnati. There's nobody that needs to motivate you guys as players, knowing that you can knock off
a top 10 team
on national television on a Friday night when you got all that exposure. Are you kidding me?
That's it right there. That is it right there. You know,
we have that shot for sure. As far as your playing days are concerned, with the three different coaches, that's got to be a tough task, having three different styles, three great men that I like a lot. Obviously, Baker is when I became a Pirate fan in 1986.
Yeah.
So, I'm not like Bubba Rosenbaum. I wasn't born into Pirate Nation like he was. And same thing with Kyle. Kyle was a teenager when he became in the 90s when he became a Pirate fan. So, but during those three coaches, while we have a few more minutes with you, what are the differences? Three great guys I liked a lot, but from a player's perspective that you played for them, what were they like?
Art Baker. He was a dad. He was a father figure. Straight. No curse words. Dadgonit. No curse words at all. He was just strict dad. Very nice guy. Bill Lewis. What's my word I can look for describe Bill Lewis? Ruthless. You know, either his way or the highway. And he let you know that he was the boss. And sometimes I don't want to say he wasn't approachable, but he let you know that he was a coach and you're either going to do it my way or else. Steve Logan came in my senior year. He was already part of the staff. So he was already one of the guys. And we advocated for him to, you know, I don't know how much it worked, but it worked. I advocated for him to be the coach. We said, we want Logan. When Bill Lewis left, going into my senior year. And Steve Logan was quick wit, smart as a whip, but he was quick wit, had a bunch of one-liners. You know, so those, you know, he just made you laugh and made going to practice easy. His play calling and his knowledge of the game was just easy, and it made and made learning easy. So with Baker, father figure, Bill Lewis, he was the doggone, I don't want to say a dictator, because but he was either his way or the highway. And with Logan, just as his knowledge was just impeccable. You know, he just knew what he was doing.
I heard when you guys had breaks under Baker, didn't you have some Pepsis? Talk about the Pepsis.
Well, with Baker, with my freshman year, which was a complete blur, because when I got to ECU, I heard about East Carolina, but when I got to ECU, I kind of lived my freshman year. It was great. So, yes, he loved Pepsi.
The family show. They don't say he'll know nothing about a Pepsi. He remembers a lot of Everclear.
I don't know what you're talking about. Don't know what you're talking about. All right. Well, yeah, there were three great coaches, and I learned a lot from all three of them. All three of them. And when ECU was at its height with with Logan, I mean, with Bill Lewis and then Logan. And it was just one of those things, you just sat back and you watched, like, man, I built this thing, man. I helped build this program. You know, I helped this. You know, now I want these guys to say that when they leave, to say, man, I built this. I helped build this program, put it back where it was, you know. Because when we came in, we looked at the players at the past. We looked at the Terry Longs and these guys that, man, these guys, they were that close. And we were able to put them over the top, you know, by the 91 season. And when these guys came back, and they said, man, you guys, you know, you guys did it. You guys did it. You know, it made little freshmen, junior, senior guys that's still in college listening to the older guys, you know, it made us feel proud. It made us feel like we accomplished something at ECU, you know, did.
Yeah, no doubt.
Did you have a Jerry, question, Kyle?
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to ask Jerry about. Talking about the coaching staffs and all, you know, going back to that 91 season and all, Steve Shankweiler is back again. What are your memories of Shank? Obviously, coached on the other side of the ball.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, he was the coach. I mean, those guys love Coach Shankweiler. You know, I mean, he's never leaving ECU. He left, came back. That's where he belongs. He just needed to retire at ECU. It's been there for 30-some years. That's all you talk. That's all these guys talk about, Coach Shankweiler. You know, so, and he's back again, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's here again.
His fifth coach of four trips.
Yeah, so pretty much. When coaching is in your blood, what you gonna do? You got to do it. You have to do it. You know, and no matter, and that's a testament of you never burn a bridge. You know,
no,
you never
no
know
doubt.
When you have to cross. You never know when you have to cross that bridge again.
No doubt.
So there he is. He's back at home again.
I said, if we could turn that offensive line around, we should probably put a statue out. Yeah. The stadium, yeah. Coach Shake, because my God, he's been there so much. We need to honor him some form or fashion.
Yeah. Now he put some good guys out there in the league. Yeah,
no question about it. I think he started coaching, I believe, in my memory, Bubba's the numbers guy. I think it was 1976, Jerry.
Woo! I was still a little whippersnapper.
Yeah, I'm with you right there. We're about the same age, so for sure. Out of curiosity, where did you get the nickname J Dog?
Travis Hunter.
Oh, wow.
Remember Travis Hunter, the quarterback of the 1980 when I got in 88, so he was our quarterback in 88.
Yeah.
And when I got in the guy started calling me hard-hitting backer. And I guess they figured it was too long to be called hard-hitting backer as a freshman. So Travis Hunter, they used to call him T-Funk because he was so smooth playing the game. And he just said, hey, your new name is J-Dog. And it stuck. And that's what they know me by now. I have people that know me now, 30 years later, J-Dog.
I love it. That's a great nickname. You got to have a great nickname if you play sports, especially football. But what are you up to now? What are you up to now before we let you go?
Well, I work at Lowe's in Chapel Hill. I deal with contractors, you know, fulfilling their dreams of getting their building houses and flipping houses. So I'm in that field right now, you know, dibbling-dabbling, refurbishing and flipping houses.
We've had a good year with everybody. My God, if you everybody goes to Lowe's, they're like, we can't be in our house, so we're going to go to Lowe's. Or wait a minute, we're going to be in our home, so we got to improve.
Let me tell you something. That's a real thing. During the first part of the lockdown, when everybody was really locked down from March till about May, we did it too for no apparent reason. Yes. When you're sitting around your house, you just notice stuff that needs to be done. We had all the wood replaced on all three of our porches. We painted the shutters on our house. We had the trim painted on our house. you just look around, you're like, well, this place sucks. We
got to make improvements.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I see a lot of that. So that's why I'm getting into the business. You know, I'm like, man, there's a lot. It's a seller's market now. If you would say. Yeah. It's a seller's market. So, but where there's a top, there's a bottom. So get it while it's good.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's good. Take the money and run, J-Dog.
Take it and run.
So you expect to win on Friday night, or you pulling hard for the Pirates, I know, right?
Of course. Always. There's no doubt that I'm pulling for the heart. No matter how many times my heart is ripped out of my chest, true and true, I'm always a Pirate, no matter what. No matter what.
Hey, Kyle, I think that, J-Dog, Kyle's very good at cutting promos. I think we need to get J-Dog to cut some promos. I think you might have found your match, Kyle.
Yeah, I think me and J-Dog would be cutting promos on the same thing, so we'd be like a tag team.
That's
like
right.
Like an animal.
We could do
that. Yeah, exactly. The Road Warriors.
The animal, too. And Hawk.
That's right.
Who's going to be Hawk and who's the animal? That's the thing.
I don't know, J-Dog. I'll let you choose, man. I'll let you choose. Whichever one you want to be, I'll be the other.
Yeah, that would work. That would work.
Very nice to meet you. Obviously, I know your name and know of you. And as always, that's one of the great things about doing the show is we get a chance to meet our heroes, people that we like a lot. And thank you for all the hard work you did for building the program under those coaches. And certainly it'll be nice again. One of the things that I want to see is the spring. If we have a spring football game, is let's have every single former player that can possibly get there next year come to have a big reunion. That's what I want to see.
That's what I would love. Let Coach Houston reach out and have the Pirate Nation just say, hey, X players, show up, please. And I guarantee you that stadium will be full of X players. All they need is the invite. That's it.
There you go.
We can go to games all day long. But if the coach reaches out to these players and say, show up, they will show up in force. Trust me.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. That will be there, no doubt about it. In fact, Tim Marshman said that I will be there. And that's what it – in fact, Coach Houston came for the 1978 team. We honored them. And unfortunately, McCool's going out of business. So we thank a lot of Linus Martinez. But anyway, December of 18, we had the 40th anniversary of that 78 team when they beat La Tech. And Coach Houston came and talked to the late, great Pat Dye on the phone. And after he talked to Coach Dye, he said that he wanted none of those players, but he wanted former players. You're always welcome at practice. He wants those players. And you guys are the ones that, you know, none of us can get up in anybody's face and say, you got to do better. But you guys that are 11-1, you guys can say, look, you got to do this. If you want to be at the top of the mountain like we are, you got to do this, this, and this. And even though, you know, there might be different eras, but there's still a lot. I mean, the fundamentals of the game are the same.
Right. Nothing's changed. Fundamentals still the same.
Well, Jerry, thank you, man, so much. It's an honor to meet you. And I'd love to have you back. And don't be a stranger. Hopefully we can get you back here during the football season.
No problem. Anytime. All right. Anytime.
All right. Hope you have a good night, man.
Same to you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you. Enjoy it. All right, Jerry, J-Dog Dillon, I was awesome. Former linebacker for ECU under Art Baker, Bill Lewis, and Steve Logan. Kyle, I don't know if you saw before we go here, but we had a couple minutes. If you had a chance to see the From the Helm on ecpirates.com from John York.
I did not.
Okay, well, we'll save it that. Out? It came out today. It's breaking news. So one of the things talked about, over $230,000 raised so far for We Believe. That campaign is, speaking of Jerry, we believe in our Pirates. Yeah, in 5 days, Kyle, 5 days, we've raised over $230,000. So, you know, Jerry and all those great guys that made us believe, well, we have a great program, and we owe it to Jerry and all the great players of the past. Let's build this thing. You know, we've had plenty of time to talk and feel sorry for ourselves. And now it's time.
Any more details on that letter from the Helm about December 5th?
I didn't see anything about that. I saw about basketball season tickets are going to sell. no basketball fans allowed in December for the non-conference games. They're going to start in hopefully the plan is to have a limited amount of fans in January and February for the conference. I know in January, February. And we know that the probability is probably not going to happen. That's from David and Kyle because of the very fact of Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, people are going to have big parties. Yeah. And I have a feeling that January, February.
You'll see fans again, maybe April or May for baseball.
And let's pray for them, too. We love, obviously, what Cliff Godwin has done with that baseball program. Tremendous job. That was the main things I remember, and I'm sure there's other things. But go to ecupirates.com, and we'll have more time to discuss that in the future. But we've got some great programming coming up. Obviously, we have our playback after the game on Friday night. We'll be doing that. Good luck to the Pirates. We have, obviously, Coach Houston's press conferences, plus the coordinator's report from yesterday. Those are archived on SoundCloud and on Anchor. And I want to remind you that we have two big things coming up. Kyle, one of the things that you were a part of today, and that is we had a chance to talk to Mike Hamrick. Mike Hamrick is going to be on our show. The former athletic director of East Carolina, of course, is the former player at Marshall right after the plane crash a few years after. And then he has gone back home to Huntington. He's the director of athletics, if you did not know. So we had a chance to talk to him. We had hammer time, and we had a chance to talk to him, Mike Hamrick. It was a lot of fun, and it was fun, and obviously some were obviously talking about the plane crash and his perspective and Marshall now. So we'll have a special Marshall podcast of the plane crash, and that's going to be on Saturday morning. We're going to drop that. We're working really hard on that, and you do not want to miss that show. It's going to be fantastic. Don't take my word for it. Listen to it on Saturday morning. It's going to be great. Plus, we're also working on a Division I college basketball preview for the state of North Carolina. There's 18 Division I schools, and we actually have we have one podcast we're going to drop in the next day or two with Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest, East Carolina, and Appalachian State are the first show. So it'll be three shows that we're doing. We got a lot of work, guys, that we're working on behind the scenes. Kyle, thank you for your hard work. Bubba, the same. Appreciate you guys so much. Do you have anything before we go?
No, I was just looking forward to Friday night and try to pull off what would be the biggest upset in East Carolina. In a long probably time. Based on point spread, probably the history of the program based on the point spread.
That's a good point. Is it, what is this, 25 or is it not?
The last I saw was around 25, yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, there was a four score. So, wow, that's going to be tough. But you never know. Friday night, we'll see how it goes. Nippert Stadium, national broadcast. And, of course, you listen to our good friends Jeff Charles and Kevin Moreau, obviously Marty Fuhrer and David Horn on the radio side of things as well. All right, so we'll go give it up for Chad Brindle, Jerry J-Dog Dillon, Bubba Rosenbaum producing, and Kyle Barber. This has been the Pirate Preview. It's right here on the Sports Objective. Good luck to the Pirates. Good night, everybody.